It's time for Rose Chat on Blog Talk Radio. We're the only show on the airwaves dedicated to growing roses. We're glad you've joined us today. Our phone lines are open, and we'd love to hear from you during today's show. The number to call is 347-677-1870, or send us a tweet using the Rose Chat hashtag on Twitter. Join us as we explore the world of roses.
Well, we're glad you joined us for another edition of Rose Chat on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Chris Van Cleve, and we've got another great show lined up for you today. Andy Vanable, a noted rose hybridizer and Eastern Director of the Rose Hybridizers Association. And Andy, somewhat of a rose historian himself, he'll be joining us in just a few minutes to talk about hybridizing roses and about some of the great rosarians of the 20th century.
You know, the rose has become a favorite of us all, and that was following a lot of hard work and dedication on many of the 20th century. Every decade of the 20th century saw many notable contributions to the development of the rose, and each development built upon the previous developments to help make this magnificent flower we grow today. And our guest today has written extensively on this subject, and I'm sure we're all interested to hear what he thinks of some of the great giants in the field of developing roses. Hey, welcome to Rose Chat, Andy.
Thank you. Good morning.
It's such a pleasure to have you join us today, and I know our listeners would love to hear how you became interested in hybridizing roses.
I became interested in hybridizing roses, believe it or not, through the Rose Show, like a lot of other people. There was a class in the Rose Show that I was asked to sponsor, and I did, and it was the seedling category. So I needed to find out more information about that, and I did.
Oh, that's neat. I understand that maybe Dr. Brownell was someone who inspired you. Could you tell us a little bit about him?
Well, Walter Brownell was from Rhode Island, just as I am, and he had many of the same problems with a lot of other rose growers in the early 20th century, where their roses didn't survive the winter. So he took it upon himself to increase the hardiness and the health of the roses that were available back in the early 20th century. And in Rhode Island, we have the Roger Williams Park Victorian Rose Garden, and I was appointed to be the society liaison between the garden and the society. And we have a whole section of Brownell roses growing there. And it's the hardy roses show themselves to be the healthiest, and they're absolutely gorgeous in the summer. And through there, I was able to collect some hips one winter. I germinated the seeds, and I ended up with a beautiful, yellow rose. And, you know, it got hooked, basically.
I think we all understand that. Chris and I like to call that the rose fever. It just does get you hooked. Well, Dr. Brown's work was sure impressive. I saw a picture of Pink Princess, and it was just such an amazingly beautiful rose. I can see why you were inspired. Someone who inspired Dr. Brownell was Dr. Walter Van Sleet, a retired physician. Can you tell us a little bit about his contributions to the rose world?
Well, Dr. Van Sleet wanted to create what he called dooryard roses, which were basically climbing roses. And he used Rosa Witteriana and Rosa Rugosa and really did a lot of work helping to increase the health and hardiness of the roses growing in the real early part of the 20th century. And his creation of Dr. W. Van Fleet, Hybrid Witteriana, is a pink rose, but it sported New Dawn. And New Dawn was the basis for a lot of climbing roses that repeated. And, it's grown worldwide pretty much. I believe it's been elected to the World Rose Hall of Fame. Don't count me on that, but something like that it's been honored with.
Well, it gets honored every year in my garden. I have three New Dawns, and I just love them. I mean, that petal pink and the nice fragrance, it is a wonderful, wonderful rose. In the 1930s, President Herbert Hoover signed into law the Plant Patent Act. How important was that to the rose hybridizers?
Well, the Plant Patent Act allowed rose hybridizers to retain ownership of their creations. So if you created a rose, and it's a unique rose, and you patent it, you own the rights to it for a certain number of years, which I believe is about 17. And no one else can introduce that rose or sell it without giving you permit, without giving you money or permission from you. So through that, hybridizers were able to, you know, gain ownership and what's the word I'm looking for? You know,
protection.
Gain protection and gain money through their creations. But before that, you could introduce a rose like Dr. W. Van Fleet and introduce it, and someone could take it, be a better producer of your rose than you are, and make money off of your rose, and you get no money for it.
Yeah, that really is a protection. In this country, so much was going on in this era for roses, but also in other countries, they were advancing the cause as well. In England, we hear about a retired Anglican clergyman, Joseph Hardwick Pemberton, and he gave us such beauties as Penelope. Can you tell us a little bit about him and what he was doing?
Well, he used a rose called Trier. And through Trier, which is a hybrid multiflora, I believe, he was able to create a new class of rose called the hybrid musk. And through those hybrid musks, they're loaded with blooms. It's a shrub rose. A lot of them have excellent scent, a lot of health, a lot of extra vigor. And if you look in the ARS handbook for selecting roses, some of his roses that he introduced well over 100 years ago are still some of the top-rated roses. I do not have any of Reverend Pemberton's roses, but through his roses, he had a rose called Robin Hood. And then Robin Hood was the basis for Iceberg, and we saw what happened with Iceberg through the Cordes family.
There definitely is an add-on situation here, a contribution. That's wonderful. That takes us up to a time when the whole world was consumed by war, and Francis Maillan comes on the rose scene. Tell us a little bit about what he did for the world of roses.
Well, Francis Maillan created probably the world's most widely grown rose before knockout, and that was peace. And peace was a hybrid tea, and a yellow that turns bicolored and excellent vigor, and it started the whole pathway of the 20th century of growing hybrid teas in floribundas, and that. And it's, you know, just look at the success of peace and its descendants, and it just set the whole 20th century right towards the hybrid tea.
Well, it's not only beautiful, but it gives it that warm feeling, and we still, you know, just the whole story behind it. I think it just is something that is very special for us, and I know many people who grow it today, so it's still very popular rose. Let's move on to another great rose variant. His name was Eugene Vorner. Is it true that he was called Papa Floribunda?
Yeah, he was Papa Floribunda. He actually coined the phrase, and he was a hybridizer for Jackson and Perkins for years and years and years. And actually, I believe he created the John F. Kennedy rose as well late in his career. It's a hybrid tea. Eugene Vorner introduced a lot of floribundas, and his contribution was more towards the colorations of the roses. He went all the way from white to pink to mauve and all the reds in between and pinks in between. And a lot of his roses were used later on for a lot of creations. It looked kind of like a stepping stone in terms of the 20th century development of the roses.
Mm-hmm. I have a Floribunda, and I love Floribundas. I love that big splash of color that they give us. And I have the one that bears his name, and it is gorgeous in my garden. It has loads of bloom. So I think he'd been pretty happy with that rose that's called after him. That takes us to Ralph Moore, and he's called the father of the miniature rose. Tell us a little bit about his work.
Well, Ralph Moore used Rosa Rouletii. And so Rosa Rouletii is a small old garden rose. It's a China, I believe, where he took the miniaturization and took roses, some created by Brownell, and basically miniaturized them. And his career was so long and so prolific, it's not funny. He lived well over into his 102, I think he died. And still when he was 100 years old, he was still introducing roses and hybridizing roses, and his mind was right there. Just, what if I did this, and what if I did this, and what if I did this? And he followed through. I actually grow Sweet Chariot, which is his creation.
Mm-hmm.
And Sweet Chariot, I believe it's won the Fragrance Award. It's a mini. It does pretty well in my garden. It's about 3 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually the granddaddy of some of my roses. So.
Wow. Well, roses must be good for your health, because there's lots of rosarians that they work into their roses up until very near 100. He's at 102. A few weeks ago, we had renowned rosarian Ted Mills on, and he's still growing hundreds of roses, and I think he's in his mid-90s. And so I think that we can safely say that roses are good for your health. You know, it wasn't just scientists and clergymen who were interested in roses. English farmers were interested in roses, too. So we have David Austin, who was an English farmer. So how did he come to give us the English roses?
Well, David Austin, like you said, was a farmer. And he thought that the pathway that was being blazed by the hybridizers of the 20th century was going down the wrong pathway, that the hybridizers were more interested in the flower form and how it looked on the show table, and didn't care as much about the health of the rose, or what's more importantly, the scent of the rose. And I'll have to agree that there were some roses introduced in the 50s and 60s that were, they were what they were, and they weren't the best roses in the world. And he went about to recapture the charm of the old garden roses. And I actually grow a lot of old garden roses, and they actually are beautiful. I love the scent, love the way they look, but they only last for about 30 days, maybe 20, and then that's it. They're done, and you have nothing but just green where the rose used to be. So he wanted to introduce the old-fashioned forms and the scents, but modernize it with repeat flowering and in different colors. And he was actually pretty successful in it. I grow a bunch of his roses. My favorite happens to be Teasing Georgia. It's a shrub rose. It grows about 10 feet high here in Rhode Island, about 10 feet wide in Rhode Island, loaded with yellow blooms.
Mm-hmm.
I don't smell as much scent on Teasing Georgia as I wish. One that he has introduced that I like for the scent is called William Shakespeare 2000. It's a mauve rose. It's beautiful. Loads and loads of blooms. The problem with William Shakespeare is it's a little bit mildew-prone here, so it doesn't do as well as Teasing Georgia. That's why Teasing Georgia gets my vote.
Well, I'm so glad that he did. Was concerned about the fragrance of a rose because, you know, every time I give someone a rose, the very first thing that happens is the rose goes to the nose, and people do want to smell a wonderful rose fragrance. And I think it just adds a lot of the enchantment of roses. Do you grow Mary Rose in your garden, the English rose?
I do not.
Okay. It's a great rose in my garden. I'm in the Midwest, and Mary Rose is one of my favorites. I enjoy that one a lot.
Teresa, we have a question from email for Andy regarding David Austin roses. This emailer from New England would like to know what other David Austin varieties would be good for your growing zone.
What's highly touted in our growing zone is a rose called Graham Thomas. It's a yellow rose. I have not grown it, so I can't say. But I will say this. It grows on its own in the Roger Williams Park Victorian Garden, which hasn't been sprayed for pesticides in years. It does reasonably well. I've grown Crown Princess Margareta. I like Crown Princess Margareta, but it was planted right next to my Teasing Georgia, so I had to take it out. I just like Teasing Georgia so much. Gertrude Jekyll, absolutely fabulous fragrance. It's not good for cut flowers. The petals don't last very long. It's absolutely gorgeous, absolutely perfect scent on it. Like I said, William Shakespeare 2000. Sophie's Rose is another rose that grows well here. We have Heritage, which is growing at the Roger Williams Park Victorian Garden. Grows about 6 feet high, maybe 3 or 4 feet wide. It has light pink, white rose. It's kind of a blend. Absolutely good.
This year, I planted Graham Thomas and took one of the blooms to our local rose show and won with Graham Thomas. It was a perfect bloom, and that was a lot of fun. You know, this year, I planted two quietness roses by Griffith Buck. It was the first time for me to have any of his roses in my garden, and it sure is just beautiful. Could you tell us a little bit about Dr. Buck and what led him to the world of roses?
Well, Dr. Buck was a different type of story. When he was growing up, he had a Spanish class. And part of the Spanish class's assignment was to write to another child over in Spain, you know, and learn how to communicate and, you know, write and speak in Spanish. Well, for some reason, the person that he had written to didn't write back. So he wanted to communicate, and the only person he knew over in Spain was a gentleman, Pedro Dot, who was a hybridizer, well known for like sea and golden moss or gold moss, whichever one he is. And through the communications back and forth, he developed a relationship with Pedro, and what's the word I'm looking for? Pedro encouraged Dr. Buck to hybridize. Now, Dr. Buck was a professor of horticulture at Iowa, I believe it was, and he was looking to increase the hardiness and health of the roses. So he had sent a letter, I believe, to Cords, and Cords recommended Rosalaxa, which is a repeat flowering species rose. And through Rosalaxa and a couple of other causes roses, he was able to get the repeat flowering roses that we know today. Now, he has beautiful roses, Dr. Buck. Among them are Carefree Beauty. And Carefree Beauty was used for the knockout roses, which everyone knows knockout.
Yeah,
but
good for the rose
club,
and everyone knows about knockout.
I didn't catch that.
That takes us to our next section. Let's talk about William Radler of the knockout rose fame. Tell us how he got started and what he's done for the world of roses.
Well, William Radler got started early, and he wanted to have a rose garden like his grandmother's catalogs had you know, he read about. So he went and bought a rose, and it thrived, and it did well. And he got very excited about roses and growing roses and showing roses. But somewhere along the line, he realized that he needed to spray these roses. You know, I don't know how many different concoctions he used, but it was over 10. And, you know, just spray and spray and spray and coddle the roses and winter protect them. He's up in zone 5. Which is a little bit colder than where I am, but it can get really cold. And he didn't like the work and the maintenance that was involved, and I actually can understand that. So he got into hybridizing through his need and want to not maintain his roses. So he used the Carefree Beauty as the mom and put Razzle Dazzle on there, which was a Floribunda, and then created a seedling. And the story goes that that one seedling came from a hip that only had one rose seed in it. And through there, he got the knockout rose, absolutely gorgeous rose, shrub, very healthy and hardy, not only here in Rhode Island, but from what I hear, it's pretty much universally used across the country. And then after that, he introduced a double knockout and a bunch of other knockouts, sunny knockout, blushing knockout, all of those. And he's gone into a little bit of the climbing roses and really expanding his repertoire. And very proud of what he's done, and he's been an inspiration for me because he started out as an amateur.
Oh, that is so inspiring. You know, we see knockouts everywhere. We're beginning to see more than just the red. And, once you have roses, there may be more that, someone may want to put in their garden, but if they can start with something that they can just plant it and leave it alone, then the love of roses can start to grow. And so I'm so appreciative for what William Radner has done for the world of roses. Well, Andy, thanks so much for sharing about all of these great hybridizers with us. They are a very impressive group indeed. And after the break, Chris is going to talk to Andy about how to get started hybridizing roses. So don't go away. There's more Rose Chat Radio coming your way.
Hi, this is Jackie D'Elia with Southern Post Journal, and today I want to talk to you about manure compost tea. This is Authentic Haven brand from California. One of the things that I really like about this is how easy it is to apply. It's a simple cotton bag filled with composted manure. You drop it in your bucket, typically a 1 to 5 gallon bucket of water. Drop in your tea bag. You'll notice some of the brown liquids coming out, and that's the manure starting to mix with the water. Once that's finished, 1 to 3 days, you'll have some fantastic manure tea ready for putting on your plants. So I've got my manure tea brewing for about 3 days, and I'm going to take a peek in there and see what it looks like. It's got a great color, it's got a great smell, and it's ready to be applied to my garden. So whether you choose to put it in your watering can and a sprayer, or just take a bucket and drench it into your vegetable garden, it's very easy to use. I use it in my garden, and I highly recommend it. So give it a try.
Find Haven Brand Soil Conditioners online at manuretea.com. Well, we're back with Andy Vanable. He is a hybridizer of roses and somewhat of a rose historian, as we've already heard, sharing with us about some of the great rosarians of the 20th century. Now, Andy, as a home gardener, I've often thought about trying to create or hybridize my own roses, but, really didn't know where to begin. I'd like to hear what tips you could offer our listeners on how to get started maybe creating a rose of their own.
Well, what I recommend to people, if they're interested, is about this time when all of the consulting rosarians around tell you to cut off the spent blooms to get new growth and to get a repeat bloom. Instead of cutting off the blooms, just let them set the hips, and then come in September or October, start harvesting some of the hips, and start germinating the seeds and learning which roses you can use for a mom rose, and just study them. And it keeps the interest of growing roses over the winter. That's how I started. I just picked hips that were just left to the elements back in 2008, and then through there, I was able to germinate about 20 roses, and I learned which roses became the better moms. Once you learn which the roses are better as moms when the following spring comes along. You can go towards those moms and start to hybridize.
Wow. So you watch your don't cut your roses. Let them set hips. And for those who are new to rose gardening or growing roses, the hips are actually that bud that forms underneath the bloom, and it'll swell up, and it'll some of them even ripen to a red color, don't they?
That's correct.
And so at that point, that's how you would know that they would be ready to harvest.
When they're ready to harvest, the color turns from green to either yellow, red, or purple, depending on the variety.
Oh.
And the right stage is when they've turned, but before they become mushy. Because as soon as they become mushy, there's chemicals in there that start to inhibit germination.
Oh, okay. Right. So you just open that really the seed pod up and extract the seeds from that?
That's right. You take the seed pod, you open it up with a knife, and then get the seeds out, and then put the seeds in some type of either wet paper towel or I use a coffee filter, actually, and put them into the refrigerator. And the refrigerator actually simulates a winter time period. It's very important to put it in the refrigerator, but not the freezer. And then after about 6 to 8 weeks, the seeds will be ready to start germinating. And you
mm-hmm.
basically just plant them in a soil germinating media. And if everything goes well, in about a week or two, they'll pop up. And if you pick the right roses, maybe in 6 weeks, they'll be blooming.
Wow. And so that would create your what you call your mama plant, right?
Yes.
Okay. And then where do we go from there?
Well, the whole period of winter time and early spring is to discover which of the mamas are germinating seeds and which ones are being vigorous and healthy. And those are the ones you should concentrate for the mama. As for the father, what you do is you take the mama plant and you see what you like about it. Take, for example, Carefree Beauty. Beautiful shrub, beautiful form, very healthy, has double flowers in it that are pink and very large. But they're pink and they don't have good form. So what I would do is I would take a rose that would have better form, wouldn't have necessarily the good habit that Carefree Beauty had, and would have a better color than what Carefree Beauty would have, non-pink. So I would take something along the lines of, I can't think right now. I would take something like Music Box. Now, Music Box, I actually like Music Box a lot, but I think that Music Box and Carefree Beauty would go along together to try to get some of that pinkness out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And to get a little bit better form. And, I actually like that phototropic of Music Box, and hopefully get something a little bit different beyond that, something in between.
Right. So I guess what you're doing, you're trying to take the best qualities from the mama and the papa and create something even better.
That's correct. Like, I actually thought of one I just did, which was Earth Song, which is a Grandiflora by Buck, which is probably a better example than Carefree Beauty. And I put on there Yellow Submarine. And then between the two, I'm hoping to get the form and the hybrid tea Grandiflora that Earth Song has, but to introduce that yellow color to it and hopefully get something in between.
Well, now, so you take the mama plant and the papa, and you put those together by mixing. How does that process work?
It's actually a two-step process. What you have to do is you have to identify a plant that's going to bloom today or tomorrow. and you have to identify the pollen donor, which is going to bloom today or tomorrow. You have to what's called emasculate the bloom, which is taking off all the male parts, which are the stamens, collecting them off of your papa, and let them dry out. Now, sometimes it takes 10 minutes, sometimes it takes an hour, sometimes it takes overnight. You have to let it dry, and then it releases the pollen from the anthers. That's ready to use. Then you go over to your mama plant and do the same thing. You take off all the petals. You take off all the stamens. I use a pair of wire cutters and just make sure that all the stamens are gone, and you have the stigmas standing at attention there. And what you do is you take the pollen that you dried out and place it over the stigmas. And hopefully, if everything goes correctly, the mama plant will accept the pollen that you give it and create a hip. And then the hips will be seeds, and those will be hybrid seeds.
From that process, you get your hip, a new hip, and then that's your hybrid seed that you then plant, and you have your cross plant at that point, right?
That is correct.
Wow. Now you've had some pretty good luck with that. I read somewhere you've had over 300 successful hybrids.
That's correct.
Wow.
A lot of them are open pollinated seedlings, I should say. But every rose seed that you germinate will be a hybrid. It's just a matter of whether the bees pollinate it or you pollinate it yourself. What I use my open pollinated seeds or the bee pollinated seeds is to learn about the mama and what it passes along to its next generation. And there's no better way to do it than just germinating a whole bunch of open pollinated seeds.
Quite good luck with that. Now, you have one rose that actually is registered, a Harris song, which, can you tell us a little bit about that rose?
Well, I was trying to discover what Darlow's Enigma had to offer to its next generation. And Darlow's Enigma, if you've grown it, creates an abundance of hips loaded with seeds. So I planted about 20 seeds, maybe 30. Let them germinate and grow along. And I created, most of them were all white, but one of them was pink. And this pink rose didn't really impress me much at first. It was pink and turned white, and it was kind of small. It was only about an inch, maybe an inch and eighth in diameter. But it was a survivor. It survived the cold winters here, just being in a pot outside. So it did well. So I planted it in the ground, and that's where it took off. It creates an abundance of flowers. I counted on one stem 70 blooms, and on another one 50, and there's a picture of it on Help Me Find of the 50 bloom spray. They start out light pink. When they open up, they're white, and they have an absolutely gorgeous smell. And it's just everything I look for in a rose. It's health, vigor, bicolored, beautiful rose scent, and an abundance of flowers.
Wow. Who could ask for more, right?
Well, hybridizers' work is never done.
Yeah, that's true. But that's incredible. Now I want to talk to you a little bit about care. You know, I live here in Zone 8A, and it's hot and humid, you know, 9 months out of the year. And, you know, you're in a totally different climate, and you're working with creating new roses. How important is disease resistance to your work?
How important is what to my work? I'm sorry?
Disease resistance.
Disease resistance is one of my primary goals. I told you before, I'm the liaison between the Rose Society and the Roger Williams Park. Well, the Roger Williams Park Victorian Rose Garden hasn't been sprayed in over 10 years. And
wow.
You can see where the roses that thrive and do well under the no-spray conditions and the ones that just keep withering and withering away to nothing. So I'm using the knowledge that I gained through the Rose Garden in my own garden, and disease resistance is becoming one of my number one, if not number two goal right after fragrance in terms of what I'm looking for in a rose. Now, there's many different classes of roses, and some classes are better than others. Shrub roses are among the best in terms of disease resistance, and through my experience, I found a lot of the miniatures, mini floras, and the hybrid teas to have the least amount of disease resistance. So what I'm trying to do is marry the two, hopefully get a miniature that has better disease resistance or a hybrid tea.
Well, I'll tell you, I am in awe of your work. That there's so much that goes into it. You know, I'm sure you could attest to how long it actually takes to, you know, to come up with varieties that are disease resistant and have fragrance. You know, one seems to work against the other, I've been told.
That's what I've been told too, but it's been my experience using Darlow's Enigma and another hybrid multiflora called Abigail Adams Rose, that there is the scent and the disease resistance that is being passed along to the next generation. Now, these are shrub roses or hybrid multifloras, old garden roses. They're not modern teas and they're not modern miniature roses, which I can't say. I have one mini flora that is a cross of Earth Song by John Dickman that's showing some excellent disease resistance. The flower form on it almost has too many petals. When it's opening, it looks good, but when it's open, it looks kind of ugly. So, and it's pink.
Ooh. And it's pink.
Yeah.
So,
pink is bad in hybridizing world, believe it or not.
Is it? There's so many beautiful pink roses out there.
That's the whole point. No one needs or wants any more new pink roses.
You know, I know people that have, you know, color gardens. They have an all-white garden or an all-pink garden. So some folks would argue that point with you, but I'm sort of with you. We have mainly, I love white and yellow roses, so those seem to be the most disease-prone, I think, so. We are definitely looking towards more disease-resistant varieties in those colors as well. Well, Andy, I want to thank you so much for taking a few minutes out of your Saturday morning to come and talk with us on Rose Chat Radio. I know our listeners have been excited to know that you would be our guest today, and we just thank you for all that you do for roses and for rose culture throughout the United States. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you for having me. I had a great time doing it.
Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
And I want to thank our listeners for joining us today for Rose Chat on Blog Talk Radio, and we'd love to hear your comments and feedback on today's show. Just send us an email at grow@rosechat.info. And you can find us on Twitter by following the Rose Chat hashtag. You can like Rose Chat Radio on Facebook. And be sure to check out our website, rosechatradio.com, for info on sponsorship opportunities and more about our Rose Chat guest. And if you're not a member of the American Rose Society, we believe that becoming a member is a decision you won't regret. They have a great new website. Just check it out at ars.org.
That's right. They do have a beautiful new website at ars.org. Now, you can learn more about Andy Vannable and his work hybridizing roses through the Rose Hybridizers Association. We've placed a link to the Rose Hybridizers Association on today's show page here at Blog Talk Radio, and we have we'll place a link to that on our Facebook page. You can also find more, as well as some of Andy's writings, at helpmefind.com/roses, and just search out Andy Vannable. He's a terrific guest today, don't you think, Teresa?
Oh, he was. I love all the history and learning about all the people who were so involved in bringing us these beautiful plants that we love so much.
Oh, yeah. I cannot – I want to get a plant of Harris Song. I need to reach out to Andy and find out how I can get that. It's a beautiful rose. If you've ever grown Darlow's Enigma or seen it in bloom, It's just this fabulous white rose, and I know that a Harris song would be equally as beautiful.
Oh, I saw a picture of it. It is very, very pretty. And one of the things I hope our listeners notice is that so many of these men that did great things for roses, they certainly didn't retire to their rocking chairs because a lot of their work was done after they retired from their day jobs. So we owe them a lot. They stayed busy, they stayed active, and most of them lived very long, healthy lives.
That's right. Maybe since we all grow roses, we'll all live to be 100. Wouldn't that be awesome?
That would be
if
great.
I could do it in the rose garden, I think it'd be fun.
Oh, yeah, heaven is a rose garden for sure.
That's right. Well, the broadcast of Rose Chat on Blog Talk Radio is brought to you by the underwriting support of Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing an all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure teas and alfalfa teas. They're available wholesale and retail at ManureTea.com. Be sure and check them out.
Well, it's been wonderful to be with you today, but until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.